You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The phrase binge drinker is usually associated with males, but new research suggests that young women have been increasingly adopting those hard drinking habits. In a recent piece for New York Magazine, Alex Morris examines this phenomenon and how it relates to modern feminism. And I'm joined now by Ms. Morris and researcher Dr. Richard Grusha, an assistant professor of psychology at the University at the Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Alex, in your piece, you point to evidence that at a time when men are reportedly cutting down their alcoholic consumption, more women are drinking and that they're drinking more. Does this reflect some sort of shift in our culture, do you think?
Well, I think it does. I mean, a lot of this has to do with the research that Dr. Grusha has done that's really looked back at the patterns of female drinking since World War II. And he's probably actually the best person to speak about this research, but there does seem to be a definite shift since the 50s that women are drinking more. And also in the past 15 years, the women who drink seem to be consuming actually more as well.
And Richard, you say in the article that women have immigrated into a culture that was once unique to men.
Yeah, that's sort of... I guess the metaphor we use, there's studies out there about cultural effects of drinking and how, you know, immigrants from other cultures, when they come to the United States, tend to be fairly conservative in their drinking patterns, and their children will sort of become acculturated to the drinking patterns of the dominant culture. And we sort of set that up as a metaphor to look at, well, what happened in this time period when women started drinking more and becoming more dependent on alcohol.
But did you find in your study that a specific group of women were more likely to have become binge drinkers?
Well, we didn't look... in the study, we were looking at alcohol dependence, which is sort of a long-term sign of alcohol addiction, I guess I would say, or roughly analogous to alcoholism. We looked at... racial ethnic groups. We found it was primarily white and Hispanic women, but not African-American women born in the 1950s and beyond that suddenly had this sharp increase in independence.
Were they more likely to be well-educated, middle class, upper middle class?
We have not really quite looked at that. I know Alex has in her article, covered a lot of other research that's been done on more recent ways of women. And, you know, there does seem to be, more effects that, well, typically when you see something that's affecting white versus African-American, that it's a good indicator that we're probably talking about a class effect rather than a race effect. So yeah, I would say it's probably fair to say it's middle-class women.
Alex?
Yeah, John Morgenstern, who's actually at the National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse, looks into the relation between education and drinking a lot, and he actually told me that they find that the more educated a woman is, the more likely she is to drink throughout her life.
Is she more likely to be urban or rural?
Well, that's actually interesting. I expected researchers to tell me that New York was a real hotbed of this kind of drinking, and actually it seems that women are drinking pretty much anywhere you go. They told me that the levels of drinking in rural areas were high as well, that it really is sort of a problem or a trend nationwide.
One of the most aggressive young female drinkers you profiled in the article, you call her Kate, works as an analyst at an investment bank where the majority of her colleagues are men. How much of a role does the work environment play in this increase in hard drinking?
Well, I think that, there's an expectation that a certain type of woman will drink now, an independent woman, a working woman.
You say it's become entwined with progressive feminism. So it's a woman who might see herself as a feminist?
Well, I think that... I don't want to blame feminism for this.
No, I can't imagine that Betty Friedan would have ever suggested that, that it would be a good thing for women to start drinking more.
Right. But, you do find that as certain avenues of life have become more accessible to women, they have taken up the drinking attitudes of that milieu. So certainly women who, you know, who go out with their coworkers after work are going to be more inclined to drink than a woman who might be home with her kids. And, you know, and researchers did point out to me that women have probably always drank, you know, on the sly when it was less socially acceptable. So it is sort of hard to know what type of drinking was going on, you know, earlier in the century. But
so the big difference here might be that women are more open about their drinking?
I think that certainly is a factor
here. Rather just
here.
Sipping it at home.
Absolutely, yeah.
Is that something that you looked into, Richard?
That would, you know, would be somewhat hard to measure, but I think it's probably safe to say that women are, in fact, drinking more, not just admitting to drinking more. You know, one of the things that we've seen since the 1980s is a pretty steep decline in per capita alcohol consumption. But this has taken place at the same time when women are actually reporting drinking more than they had previously. So, so I imagine it's both. Women are drinking more openly. And, of course, being able to drink more openly means there's more opportunities for drinking and probably greater consumption.
Is it also more acceptable? I remember when, earlier in the century, of course, women didn't smoke much, or it was only something that certain women would do. Then at a certain point, it became acceptable for all women to smoke, and then we had a situation where more women, percentage-wise, were smoking than men.
I think it's definitely become more acceptable. I mean, I'm in my 20s. But I drink more than my mother does, who drinks more than my grandmother does. And I think that, I spoke with women who told me, I feel like drinking is really a social and professional necessity. I feel like abstaining is not really even an option. So I think it's become a lot more acceptable, if not almost expected, that a woman will drink.
Richard, Alex quotes another researcher saying that college is often identified as a training ground where
yes.
the majority of binge drinkers develop their habits. Do you think that binge drinking is a learned behavior, or is there a biological component?
Well, there's certainly both. I mean, there is a biological component to alcohol consumption and binge drinking.
There's a genetic predisposition to alcoholism?
Right, but we need to emphasize that that's a predisposition. It's not a predetermined outcome. For example, you have to be able to metabolize alcohol, and some people are not able to metabolize alcohol and therefore don't drink. For example, the Flushing syndrome is common in some Asian populations. But what's interesting, women are really in many ways are less biologically predisposed to drink. They have lower levels of the enzyme that metabolizes alcohol. As Alex points out in her article, higher percentage of body fat means lower percentage of water and higher effective concentrations of alcohol. And women are more sensitive to bitter taste than men. These are all factors that would generally be aversive to a person drinking. They would lead to aversive reactions.
Researchers at Harvard Medical School recently found that women who consume more than 2 alcoholic drinks a day have a higher risk of getting the most common type of heart rhythm disturbance, which can raise the chances of having a stroke. So women don't handle, don't metabolize alcohol as well as men do?
No, I mean, one thing that was really surprising to me when I was doing this research is I had always known that as a woman and a relatively small woman, I needed to drink less than my male friends when I went out with them. But I actually learned that even if a man and a woman are the same size, the woman needs to drink half as much as the man in order to have the same effect, simply because of how we metabolize alcohol, because of certain enzymes, and the way they interact, our body composition.
In fact, the studies that have indicated that certain things in red wine really do help the blood system work better in men than they do in women. Isn't that true, Richard?
I wasn't aware of that particular finding, but that's certainly plausible.
Recently, a group of about 130 college presidents asked the federal government to reconsider the legal drinking age of 21, bring it back down to 18. Do you think that lowering the drinking age would decrease binge drinking?
No, there's absolutely no evidence that that would be the case, and there's a lot of data on that. Alcohol policies are some of the most well-studied policies, public health policies in the world, and all the evidence, and there is state-by-state and year-by-year variation that allows very sophisticated analyses of these policies. And all the available data suggests that lower legal drinking ages lead to more drinking.
But
isn't
there also the taboo factor? People are more likely to do something in excess because they're not allowed to?
A lot of women told me that it's the very acceptability of drinking that leads them to do it. That if
they're not judged for...
Exactly. It's the easiest way to kind of be wild and lose control and have no one look twice at that, you know, say to you, no, stop drinking, don't have that fourth drink, don't have that fifth drink. No one's going to say that to you. So it's very easy to get away with an abusive relationship with alcohol.
Yeah, well, go ahead.
If you think about the taboo factor, smoking has become taboo in our culture, and it has been associated with a marked decline in smoking. I mean, the fact that smoking is no longer socially acceptable has led people to not smoke. So there's no reason to think that the reverse logic would apply to alcohol.
Well, illegal drug use is often, illegal drugs are often abused because young people are told that they can't use them. So, and alcohol, I think, is a little different than smoking. I'm not sure that people see a direct link between alcohol and serious physical problems. You could smoke normally and get lung cancer. You drink normally and you probably won't have any problems. It's only when you overdo it and you destroy your liver and your kidneys.
Yeah, no, I think, yeah. I mean, this is something that a lot of researchers brought up, is that people are very aware of the negative physical effects of smoking, and yet they don't really know about the effects of alcohol. There's sort of some kind of double standard.
Listener from Washington, D.C. asks us, what are the women drinking? He says he doesn't see a lot of women drinking beers. Are they drinking hard liquor, or are they just drinking wine?
They are, actually. There has been research that's shown that women around 2001, young female drinkers, actually their drinking preferences sort of switched from beer, which is the cheapest, so has conventionally been understood as the beverage of choice for young drinkers. But they switched from beer to actually liquors.
And so they're drinking cocktails?
Cocktails are making
a comeback?
And they believe that this has a lot to do with a concerted effort on the part of the alcohol industry to attract these drinkers to these types of liquor.
And we'll address that after we take a little break. My guests are Alex Morris, whose article, Gender Bender, Should Gender Equality Extend to Drinking? It was in the December 7th issue of New York Magazine. Dr. Richard Grusha was one of the researchers she consulted. He is an assistant professor of psychology at the Washington University School of Medicine. Stay with us for more. We're back with Dr. Richard Grusha, an assistant professor of psychology at the Washington University School of Medicine. He's one of the researchers cited in Alex Morris's article called Gender Bender, Should Gender Equality Extend to Drinking? It was in the December 7th issue of New York Magazine. A listener points out, apropos of what we were discussing, that since the drinking age was set at 21 in 1984, research shows alcohol-related traffic deaths among 18 to 20-year-olds have decreased by 11%. So that has is an obvious, really positive effect. I wonder about those college presidents under those circumstances.
Well, I also think that it's important to note that the brain is more susceptible to alcohol while it's still developing. So the younger someone, you know, the age of onset of drinking is, the more likely that person is to drink more. They've actually found that women who begin drinking at age 17 or younger, their odds of developing alcoholism are more than tripled. So that's significant.
You mentioned losing control earlier, and you write in the article that a woman's control over her life and the decision of when and how to lose that control is the point behind this type of drinking.
Well, I think that women aren't going out and saying, I'm going to drink like a man. I need to compete with men, and I need to. I don't think that there's any of that involved in drinking, but I do think that there is this. There is an idea that's tied to feminism that a woman has control over her body. She has control over her actions. Her choices shouldn't be judged differently than the choices a man makes. And I do think that that does extend to her drinking patterns.
Well, Richard, excessive drinking is dangerous in many ways, but for women it's generally thought to be even more of a problem because it makes them vulnerable to all sorts of things, including sexual predators. One woman that Alex mentioned in the article even decided not to prosecute her date rapist because it was a load of trouble and I had better things to do, like drinking more.
Yeah, those are some really good points that Alex makes here and in her article. We really shouldn't judge women for wanting to do the same things men do, but at the same time, women need to be aware of the biological consequences of drinking that are very different between women and men. And as you point out, there are also social consequences, adverse consequences faced by women that are generally not as much of a problem for men.
Well, beyond date rape, Alex, doesn't binge drinking also provide a convenient excuse for having sex with a stranger?
Well, I think obviously drinking lowers one's inhibitions, and certainly...
Because I did, I got drunk, I didn't realize what I was doing.
Sometimes it's fun to have your inhibitions lowered. I mean, sometimes that's what you want, is to not have those little voices in your head saying, this is naughty, this is bad. You just want to go out and enjoy your night and see what the night brings you, and drinking can certainly facilitate that.
Well, a listener who read your article said she was disappointed with its conclusion. One drink a night is unrealistic for anybody who's out for an evening with friends. Is there a more practical solution?
I wish. that's what the researchers have told me is a safe level of drinking.
One drink. Nurse it all night.
One drink. And unfortunately...
Don't drink white wine because it gets warm after a while.
Unfortunately, you're also not supposed to save all your drinks up for Friday night. really being drunk is damaging.
How generational is this, Richard? In an op-ed piece in yesterday's New York Times, Susan Cheever argued that New Yorkers are more civilized at parties. Maybe she's just talking about New Yorkers. She says she hasn't seen anyone drunk at a party in 10 years. Do you think she's just going to the wrong parties? Or since she's 64, is this a reflection of a generational divide?
Well, there may be, and this is in some ways related to the points that Alex was just making. It may be more of an age effect than a generational effect, that as people become older, they're less likely to drink to excess. And so, as far as drinking more than one drink a night, that's probably not a very realistic expectation for, a 25-year-old going out for cocktails and dinner. But the question is, how long is that going to persist into the lifespan?
Well, let's say I go out with somebody and I order a bottle of wine. We made the point earlier that I can handle a couple of glasses more, however much half of that bottle is going to involve me drinking. Yeah. And if she keeps up with me, it's going to have much more of an effect on her, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. Unfortunately, that's just the nature of biological differences between men and women.
So do I just have to drink 3/4 of that bottle of wine to be a nice guy?
Well, yeah, that would be.
I'm doing this for your health, darling. It's really not because because I'm a lush. It's because I just want to keep you healthy.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for giving me a wonderful excuse. But I wonder about image. A listener suggests that a major change in the way women thought about all of this was shows like Sex and the City. We also have movie stars whatever celebrities of one sort or another, like Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan.
Right, sort of Britney Lindsay cohort. I think it's become a lot more prevalent to see women drinking and to see, movie stars and supposed role models drinking. And also, I just... To go back to advertising a little bit, In 2001, there were about 2,000 ads on cable TV for liquor products. And by 2007, there were almost 64,000. The industry spending went from $5 million to $128 million. So
they're going after women in the same way they went
after
them with smoking earlier?
Yeah, and they're going after young women. I mean, these advertisements are airing on shows with really heavy the viewing age is skewed pretty low. And so I do think that these women are young women are watching shows that they enjoy and then seeing these products sort of, you know, in the commercials. And I can't help but think that there is an effect.
In the past, beer commercials were always aimed at men, embarrassingly aimed at men, probably the stupidest men in our society, judging from those commercials. But I understand that in Scotland, Coors Brewery is now aiming a beer at women by making it a pink color.
Oh, really? I hadn't heard that.
A listener just informed me of that. Are women duped that easily, do you think? Gee, if you saw a pink beer, would you say, oh, gee, that's for me?
It sounds kind of nauseating to me, but I don't think that it's that women are dupes that easily. I think drinking is fun. I mean, let's just be honest. Going out and having a drink and having something that tastes good to you. A lot of the new products, the different kinds of vodkas, the boutique liquors they taste really delicious. They're like dessert.
And how are they being pitched at women?
Well, the content of the advertisements is certainly seems female oriented. If you look at some of these ads in magazines, the lettering is bubbly and the page is pink and it's all very girly and I think that it's clearly not the type of advertisement that would appear to the meat and potatoes type of beer drinker guy.
My guests are Alex Morris, whose article, Gender Bender, Should Gender Equality Extend to Drinking, was in the December 7th issue of New York Magazine. Also with us is researcher Dr. Richard Grusha, an assistant professor of psychology at the Washington University School of Medicine. And joining us now on the phone is one of the people you talked to for your article, Mo Tessick.
Hi, Mo.
Hi. I'm sorry. She didn't talk to me. I'm just mentioned, and I was somebody told me this show was on. I was a girl.
Is that why you're calling from Philadelphia?
No, I'm. I just have a Philadelphia cell phone number. Oh. I'm actually calling from the Lower East Side, home of many bars and my house, which makes it very convenient to drink a lot. I was curious because this became quite a thing on the internet. I was asked by a stand-up comedian at a comedy show called Thinking and Drinking why I hadn't reported my being date raped, why I hadn't reported it to the police 10 years ago. And my initial response was, it was a lot of trouble and I had to
Oops, excuse us. Repeat what you just said. Some technical glitch just happened.
Sorry. I told her, I was sort of taken aback at being asked, and I told her, it was a load of trouble, and I had better things to do, like drinking more.
Yeah, I quoted you earlier.
And I was curious as to how that rings to a broader audience. I mean, I am...
It sounded awful to me, I have to tell you, Mo, that you had better things to do, like drinking. That it sounds to me like you were saying, well, I'm willing to put myself into a dangerous situation again.
Right. I mean, you know, we put ourselves into, you know, situations of some degree of danger every time we leave our houses. I mean, every time we get into cars... what it was a joke. I obviously that is not the reason that I didn't report my date rape. I mean, 10 years ago. But it was. But it's not a question that I had ever been asked by anyone. Particularly in a public setting. And she went on to sort of, say no, you were thinking only of yourself. You were selfish. All of these things that, you know, it's fair to say. I mean, I have a degree of regret about the way, you know, not reporting my date rape 10 years ago. But it's also, you know, it was a comedy show. I think that that should be established. And I think that basically, I mean, you know, look, I don't think that there's too much of a story here, but women drink more because we spend a lot, we spend a much longer time living single before we get married and, you know, have kids.
You're nodding your head, Alex.
Yeah, no, I think she's absolutely right about that. And in all fairness, the show, I mean, I do think a lot of things, and there was a lot of discussion of drinking on the show that Mo was on. And I think that a lot of things were said tongue-in-cheek. And I think a lot of things said on Jezebel were said tongue-in-cheek. But also, there was a lot of drinking going on. And the show itself did, there were some things that became very uncomfortable.
But it was said in the same kind of spirit that I used to, when people used to ask me when I was a smoker, if I knew about cancer. And I'd say, please don't make me nervous. I'm just going to have to smoke another cigarette. And I thought that was witty at the time. Now I think I was being an idiot, but that's a whole other matter.
It's funny, sure.
Trying to be funny.
I think that that's a perfectly acceptable response to why are you still smoking. I mean, people do not make decisions that are maybe in the interest of you know, living longer. People make short-term decisions all the time that you know, are sort of that counteract their long-term interests. And that is just life, you know. I mean, that is just reality, and people do it, you know, drinking, smoking.
Mo, thank you for calling, Mo. We have another caller who actually had a similar experience, Liz from Cranford. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. I actually had a similar experience, as you said. I went out with some guys that I worked with at the time, and some of them set this up as a joke. We went to a motel room and we were drinking, and actually the other people left and left me alone with this guy who turned out to be quite crazy when he was under the influence, and he ended up holding me hostage. And I finally managed to escape, and I did not report it to the police because given the circumstances, I felt like they would have had a hard time believing me. And I settled for getting him fired, and to me that was justice enough.
But in the end, that often is the case. People don't feel they have credibility if they were really drunk themselves.
Yes, that's true. And, Leonard, I also have to say that if you were drinking with me and you tried to take 3/4 of a bottle of wine, you would have had trouble indeed.
We would have had to arm wrestle for the last glass.
I haven't drank for 25 years, but I do think that leaving the drinking age at 21 is wise, given the maturity level of most people and that they really don't have their lives on track. I certainly did not. And let's just say it isn't helpful.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling us.
Actually, in the UK, women who have been involved in date rape, if the man can prove that the woman was drinking, his punishment is significantly lowered.
And that's why they'll always be in England. Neha from Jersey City, hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Yes, Neha.
I'm a psychiatrist.
You're a psychiatrist?
Yes. And I just wanted to say that, I mean, from personal experience, as from also from reading some books, specifically this book called Unhooked, it's amazing. I think it's a cultural thing. I remember when I was in med school, going out after exams, and heavily drinking was just the thing. And if you weren't able to do that, you would not be hanging out with most of your class. And that was just the thing. And I realized that was like completely, you know, abusive of alcohol and how sure I put myself in danger many times. Unfortunately, nothing happened. But at the same time, I think it's part of getting ahead in the world and competing with men and be like, yes, I can do it.
Are you hearing this from your own patients?
I haven't heard it from as many patients, but that's also because I'm working in Newark. The population is different. The population I'm working with is so poor that I'm just trying to get them to go to school and survive and have a job. So, but a little bit, I do have some Hackensack patients, which is a little bit more middle-class population. I do hear it from a lot of men and also women. Alcohol abuse is throughout, just men and women.
But
and
but let me ask, and I ask you, Dr. Grisha as well. We're talking about alcohol here, but would it be just as likely smoking marijuana, for example, to excess? Because I think a lot more women are smoking pot these days than they did years ago, and I would think that that's part of the same kind of mindset.
I believe that's true, that the gender gap, you know, has closed as far as other drug use is concerned. And so are you asking, is it just there to sort of compete with men and keep up with men?
Well, is it all part of the same sort of culture shift? If in some cases it would be alcohol, in other cases it might be marijuana, but it used to be crack, but in the end it's all the same sort of thing, which is becoming something other than you are under normal circumstances.
I would think so. I mean, there's a whole variety of motives people have for using drugs, from, you know, a desire to experiment, a desire to relax, a desire to, you know, let inhibitions go. I think it is all of a piece, and abuse of one substance generally tracks with abuse of other substances. You know, as alcohol consumption has gone down, marijuana consumption has gone down somewhat, and then when alcohol goes back up, marijuana goes back up as well.
It's interesting that in Europe, according to a Wall Street Journal article recently, the relationship with alcohol has been changing. It used to be that people drank some wine with a meal. Now younger people are much more likely to be binge drinking, as they are in this country, and the traditional glass or two at mealtimes is giving way to a new culture of the kind of binge drinking we've been discussing.
Well, drinking is an activity. I mean, it's a go-to activity. You know, you don't – it can be the goal for the evening for men and women. And I think that you're seeing – I definitely think that type of culture of drinking that we've talked about at college campuses is spilling over into people's 20s, into their 30s. I definitely think that and I think it's about the permissibility of it. You know, no one feels like they're doing something wrong if they go out to a bar and have five or six drinks. Although technically, you know, for a woman, that would be an unsafe level of drinking.
I want to thank you both so much for being with us. Alex Morris's article, Gender Bender, Should Gender Equality Extend to Drinking, was in the December 7th issue of New York Magazine. Dr. Richard Grisha is one of the researchers cited in that article. He's an assistant professor of psychology at the Washington University School of Medicine. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Leonard.